Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today we're going to be talking about critical failures when, despite your best intentions, things go horribly, surprisingly, hilariously wrong in just the worst way. Are they good and realistic, or more trouble than they're worth? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into the discussion, I'll remind everyone, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after party chat. That is a live video chat with Dan and I, though not this week. I think, Dan, unfortunately, you have to be elsewhere. Dan is wandering, but I'll be there for the after chat. That is a private chat hosted on our Discord server for all of our patrons. And you can join in by joining our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get that all wrapped up by the end of the show, and maybe about 10 minutes after the end of the show, maybe 2:10 Eastern, we should be on, or I should be on, to chat with you all to further the discussion.
So good to see you, Paul. We're on a little couple minutes late today because, ironically and amazingly, Paul has been fighting with our technical setup that kind of things kind of went wrong on today. So our question about realistic, is it worthwhile? Is it good to grapple with these things? Is very much on our minds this very moment. Yeah. We're so glad you could join us.
Yep. I thought for sure that the show was going to be canceled up until about 5 minutes ago. So I'm glad we're here.
Good recovery, sir. An excellent recovery. We narrowly made it, frankly. Yeah. So good job on that. When I brought this issue up on our Discord server, there's actually a lot of interest in this topic this weekend. And based on an ask from me, like a lot of great examples of it's sometimes older games where a lot of the examples that were shared where people know about fumble rules. And it's a rule that, you know, standard D&D today has critical hits, has double damage on a natural 20, and it kind of feels symmetric that there ought to be something extra bad when you roll a natural one. So I think there's kind of this symmetry feel for it. We've talked about critical hits in a prior episode ourselves. But it tends to be a rule that was more common in like older non-D&D rule sets. And so part of my question is, why have things trended in that direction instead of the other? I will say, okay, so part of the reason this is on my mind is I'm playing my Star Frontiers campaign last week, and one of the newer players rolled an attack roll and got the worst thing you can possibly roll. And of course, in that system, it's percentile based, so the lower you roll, the better. They rolled double zero. They rolled 100. And I don't think it had happened before. My players assumed there was going to be some kind of horrible fumble result. There they go, oh no, because in my D&D games I do use a little fumble rule, and they're actually accustomed to, for some reason, I've had a lot of monsters like fall off high places, so they, I think my players for some reason have gotten in the instinct that a natural one means you fall off a cliff or a roof, because that seems to happen a lot in my games. But in Star Frontiers, where there is this auto knockout rule, actually, if you roll a natural one or two, there isn't any natural fumble rule. So actually, they were kind of surprised when I said it's that's just a miss. Kind of similar to, you know, standard D&D nowadays, a natural one is an automatic miss, but there's no other result. So now I'm kind of wondering about whether I should sketch in a little house rule for Star Frontiers, because apparently my players expect that. maybe I should deliver on that. And I'm wondering what you, Paul, think about that, or what some other people think about that today.
That is interesting. I mean, there's an interesting angle to this of just the expectations of the player at the table, right? That they've clearly you have players who've played a lot of different games. And so over the course of history of gaming, yeah, there's been a lot of cases of these kind of rules existing. And so I understand that expectation. As you mentioned, the symmetry, like we roll D20s a lot. I know you're in your case, it's a percentile, but like you're rolling, if you're using a D20 system, the natural 20, you know, forever, right? It's in our modern culture that natural 20 is a thing, right? That is extra special somehow. It's success plus plus. And so like the natural one feels like that would make sense, that you should have a fumble to go along with the natural one. So I'll just throw out my salty opinion. Don't do it. It's not a good idea.
Oh, really? Really?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay. This is going to be one of the, okay, well, these are one of these episodes where Paul and I are going in different directions on that. Cause I kind of like a fumble rule for a number of reasons. Have you played with that in the past and had a bad experience, or have you just always avoided it, Paul?
I mean, I've definitely played with it, and a lot of systems use it for a lot of different things, right? I mean, the classic is just in combat, right? We in combat, and let's go back to like old school D&D, right? In old school D&D, I think there was no critical rules whatsoever, mm-hmm. right? So the idea that a natural 20 was somehow special is just something I think that like culturally happened for some reason, right? I feel like maybe it was invented organically and then maybe wormed its way into the rules eventually. But, right. But like if you're playing first edition AD&D or classic OD&D or BX&D, there's no rules here to support this, right? No rules that say natural 20 is better than everything else for some reason, nor are there any rules that a natural one is worse than other things.
Right.
For some reason, my expectation of what I've seen just happen over the years is that people house rule this, right? And then the natural 20 is an easy house rule. People come up with something like, oh, you get double damage, or you get to roll twice the dice, or you get maximum amount of damage, right? Whatever it is, we're just going to muck with the damage die and make it that much better. There's no corollary for the natural one, right? I can't say like, oh, it reduces, you missed, right? You're not going to reduce the damage. There is no damage. You missed. So now we have to do something clever on top of missing, right? Like we know the basic stakes of rolling an attack roll. The stakes are if I succeed, I hit, I cause some damage. Maybe if I'm very lucky, I kill the enemy. If I miss, the stakes are nothing happens. I wasted my turn. The critical hit of like increasing the amount of damage or doubling the damage or whatever it is, it still kind of falls within the sandbox of those stakes. But for some reason on natural ones, we're now encouraged to push away from those stakes, right? To exceed and like do something. And usually it's something, and frankly, in my case, what I've usually found is you got to improvise, right? You got to come up with something on the fly. I don't know. You drop your weapon, something bad happens, right? And then, I feel like I've always been encouraged to like, well, now I got to take the situation in and I got to improvise something clever and fun, but balanced. And I think one, that's just a lot of pressure, right? It's a lot of extra inventing on the side of the DM.
I feel this. Yep.
Yeah. And two, it's often because you're coming up with it on the fly, it's often imbalanced, right? It's often something that's maybe a little too severe. I feel like most folks go into the realm of something too severe. Oh, you hit your friend, right? You throw your sword across the room, right? Something really bad that's really unpleasant. And the player is now frustrated because I didn't know that was even possible, right? I didn't know that was like crap, right? This really sucks. And then I'll just say this, like I can't looking back on all these cases of games I've played in the past, I'm not coming up with a case where a critical fumble made for a great story that I retell all the time. I know there are some out there. I don't want to say like that it doesn't happen. I'm sure people have hilarious stories of things that happen in their game because someone rolled a one that exists. But in my experience, it doesn't add enough to the game to warrant the problems it causes.
Okay. And I will say I've had good memories. I have some good memories of fumbles that were memorable. Probably painful to my, it's gone, you know, it goes back and forth, frankly. I've had some painful events that were amusingly frustrating with players. And then, frankly, since I do apply those rules to both the players and the monsters, my players actually eagerly, when I roll a natural one as DM, my players actually eagerly, like, so they fall down, right? They fall off the roof. They fall off the cliff.
Yeah.
What my players expect. So they've had some advantageous moments for me rolling a one that they kind of look forward to now. But I totally hear the issue of if you're thrown on a fiat basis, if you have to make something up. I totally feel the same way of I don't entirely trust myself to keep it balanced. And and I also agree that you tend to go overly Monty Python, overly severe with the punishment if you're just making it up on the fly. And I'm excited. I want to do something dramatic.
Right. And then I think at a meta level, at a larger level, then it just makes the overall feel of the game a little goofier, right? Like, one in 20 is actually reasonably common. So, like, the chances of this happening are fairly high.
Also an issue.
Like now suddenly our combats are filled with swords flying all over the place and people falling off of buildings and all kinds of wackiness, which just doesn't feel to scale with the you do some extra damage. Right. Critical hit. You do some extra damage. Okay, cool. More points.
These are very reasonable issues, Paul. So good news, everybody. I've got a solution for that. And that is what we could do is we could maybe do some research and we could make a table or a matrix of results in advance and commit to rolling on that table and knowing what the distribution of possible results are. So that should help us out. Let's look at a couple of examples, shall we? I'm so glad this came up. A number of the examples when they come up are again from older games. Like this did come up, and Paul, of course, you're totally right. Core D&D never, up until 2000, never had a core rule for something special on a 20, and by symmetry, never had anything bad on a natural one. Those were not things Gary Gygax explicitly didn't like those rules. Also thought they were too punishing for the players, as some of us will point out. But very, very quickly, in like variant rules on the sides, people were coming up with these things. When we talk about this, frequently one of the first things that comes up is RuneQuest. And I was hoping someone could help me track down what exactly the rule was in RuneQuest, and our patron Joshua helped me out. So that is the first thing I have with the red dot there. So here's the RuneQuest, I think first edition, I believe, fumble table. I know it's a little small on the screen there, but what happens here? Now, interestingly, almost none of these systems send you to the fumble table on every natural one. So usually there's like, you got to roll a natural one, and then there's some kind of gatekeeping roll on top of that, and then you get to the table. So my understanding with RuneQuest was when you roll natural, I guess with any attack, I never played RuneQuest, so if I mangle this, I apologize. I think on any attack, you had a 1 to 5% chance depending on your skill level, something like that. So a new player, maybe 5%, experience, maybe 1%. You get to the table here, and it's percentile-based, and you can see if we kind of think about the range of effects, the top couple effects are like, lose one attack, lose one parry, lose a couple attacks, and then all the way down to the bottom, it's on a 98, you can hit yourself for a critical hit. And then after that, there's like roll a couple times on this table and kind of add it all up.
Can I just go on a tangent here and say how much I hate tables that include that like roll twice on this table. I hate that. Opens the door for infinite recursion. It's lazy. You couldn't come up with one more thing? Come on,
you know,
don't do this. Don't do this.
Okay, if you look up, so our person who's we've benefited a lot in the show, Dyson Logos. If you look on his blog, Dyson made a table for fifth edition, a variant fifth edition fumble table. And he actually said he plays DCC. He likes a lot of Wahoo. He actually doesn't think fumbles work super well in 5th edition, but by request, he made a table. And it's pretty funny because he intentionally built that in, Paul. There's results that send you like further up in the table of like roll several dice and add them. And on the upper end, there's results that send you to the back of the lower end of the table for more gentle stuff. And you can ping pong back between and add results and subtract results specifically to kind of turn the screws on specifically that kind of effect. So one thing I want to point out, so I don't have it on screen here, but again, you're talking first edition RuneQuest and kind of the motivation for this game. There's a piece of text that introduces this that I thought was very interesting. Is it says, the authors here present a table based on all the strange and silly things which have happened to them on the tourney fields of the Society for Creative Anachronism. So in their view, this bunch of stuff of lose a parry, shield strap breaks, armor strap breaks, fall down, twist an ankle, vision impaired, stuff like that are things they've actually experienced or seen. And the motivation come out of, you know, a lot of RuneQuest is hoping to actually make a more realistic combat system based on actual real world experiences, which I thought was an interesting place to come from.
Yeah, maybe I'm just feeling a little spicy from all of the technical nonsense that I just had to deal with. Here's my take on using SCA data as an important input. I actually had recently, I was at a party, met up with a friend of mine who turns out is nobility in the local SCA chapter around here.
Great.
And he told me this wonderful joke, Dan. What is the difference between LARPing and the SCA?
Actually hitting each other?
The difference between LARPing and the SCA is that the SCA believes there is one.
I'm not what? I'm not following. I'm not following that. What is
the difference? Is that the SCA believes that there is a difference?
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. It's just went totally stupid there for a second. Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
Thinker.
Great.
Thinker that joke. There okay. You go.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
So anyway, yep. Sorry. So yeah, I don't know. Is the SCA a valid input for gaming when it is ultimately gaming? Isn't that a little self-referential? Okay. Go on.
Well, wait, you don't like RuneQuest. That's fine. So another common, another famous result from the early days is the Arduin Grimoire, right? The Arduin Grimoire, a series of variant rules that was infamously loathed by Gary Gygax. He specifically wrote in articles and rules like no one should touch the Arduin Grimoire. Oh, I know it's in the first edition DM's guide for whatever the book is that makes you lose intelligence points. He referred like, oh, maybe it's the Arduin Grimoire because it's so stupid that your brain will degenerate. So it actually became a magic item in the game. So I've got that with the orange dot there. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's pretty, you know, Arduin is generally known as being really wahoo. I don't find this fumble table, you know, by Dave Margrave, I don't find this fumble table super crazy. So again, what it says at the bottom here is you got to roll double ones. You make an attack, you got to roll double ones. So you roll a one, and then you roll a d20 again for another one, and then and some people have misread this over the years, but then that gets you on the table. Mm-hmm. And the results here are from glancing blow, weapon slips out of grip, foot slips, you can hit yourself, maybe you're off balance, hit the wrong target, and then again, way down, again, 98. 98 is a result, critical hit an ally. 99 is critical hit yourself, and Paul, 100 is roll three more times and add them all up. So, so aside from the last three, they're kind of not totally insane, which is like what I always get told about the Arjun Grimoire. They're not crazy. But again, I'll say that, again, a piece of text at the bottom says something similar. It says, this chart will put realism into the game like nothing you have ever seen, unless you've ever been to a society tourney and seen the novices clobbering everyone but those they're supposed to hit.
But themselves? Are they hitting themselves? That's a thing? They're hitting themselves. Really? Not buying it.
This is a question that I have, actually. The cases where, and there aren't a lot, right? There aren't a lot on these tables. And, you know, here we are on the crazy Arjun Grimoire, and the chance of you hitting yourself, if you add it all up, is what? One chance in 40,000? One attack in 40,000, you'll hit yourself? But I don't know if anybody has any opinions about, like, how likely is it to actually stab yourself with your own sword when you're armored? I tend to be a little skeptical of that myself, but I'm sure someone did it sometime. They probably didn't tell anybody about it after the fact, right? I mean, I'm sure it was like, oh yeah, this huge guy came up to me, but man, I gave him what for? They're not going to come away back home and go, yeah, I accidentally stabbed myself in the foot. Right, admittedly.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. So this is wacky. I also want to like be a little critical here of the whole like, okay, so it's not just on a one, you got to recheck and do it. Like, I get it. You want to reduce the probability.
Yeah.
But like, so you're adding, how much complexity are you adding here? For what? For something that is odd, bizarre, that feels weird, that makes the players, you know, just feel very unlucky. It's just very gambly to me. And I will still stand by my statement of like, I don't think it actually adds to the game. I think all that it adds to the game is unnecessary complexity.
Well, maybe this will be better. So admittedly, I didn't ever myself use RuneQuest the Arjun Grimoire. I didn't see it until, frankly, just a couple of years ago, actually, based on the vacuous grimoire that warned me against it. But what I did do for a number of years is in 1980, there was an article in Dragon Magazine from TSR with a variant system of critical hits and fumbles written by Carl Parlagreco. And here's the fun. Thanks for pulling. You're pulling up the fumble effects here. There's like about a page and a half of critical effects for different types of weapons, which is kind of common. Bladed weapon, missile weapon, blunt weapon, that kind of stuff. Animal with claws. So what Carl does here, and I appreciate the mathematical purity that motivated him, is in the text of the article, it says, yeah, if you go to the tables on every single 1 or 20, that's too many. That's too common. So what I'm going to do, and the other thing he points out is that, and I get this, if you only go to the criticals on a 20, that is kind of weird because when someone's super heavily armored and you can only hit them with a 20, everything's a critical hit, which is super weird. Yep. So Carl's answer is that the 1 and the 20 don't make any difference. He doesn't care about the 1 or the 20. Mm-hmm. Every single time anybody rolls an attack, you also calculate a percentage chance for a critical hit or a miss based on the difference between what you rolled and what the target number is in the D20. So for example, if I need to roll a 15 and I only roll a 10, that means there's a 5% chance for me to fumble. So every single D20 roll, you do that calculation, target minus what you roll, then you got to roll percentile dice. And if that percent comes up, then that gets you to the fumbler table. So, not too bad. Just tripling the number of dice you roll for every attack by everybody all the time. So D20 and then math and then percentage and then get to the table. But it's balanced. It's not something weird on a 20. So anyway, so you get to the fumble effects table, and this, I got to say, I feel is a little bit more severe than our other options. So it starts off with slip, stumble, lose grip, but then by the point of like 75 and above, it's mostly all hitting yourself or friends. So there's hit self for double damage, hit a friend for double damage, critical hits on you or a friend. And then there's also, of course, roll two times or three times or something like that. So I feel like, you know, Carl's not talking about like I watched tournament events and I'm inspired by it. I feel like he's kind of coming in a second generation gamey thought process. And I think things are getting a little bit more severe here in his table. But so for what it's worth, I did use this for a number of years. I didn't use his percentile stuff. What I would do is I'd wait for a natural one. I'd let the recipient roll a save, roll a saving throw versus paralysis. And if they fail that, then we get to the table. And over time, I was marking this up and I was like, downgrade that. Not a critical hit, just a normal hit. Not lose whatever it is, 1 to 6 rounds on the trip and fall, maybe just lose one round. And over time, this table became all marked up and crossed out and reduced and saving throw here and saving throw there and reduce this. And I'm like, I really should take the message that I'm trying to deliver to myself, but this kind of isn't really making any of us super happy.
Yep. That makes sense to me. Fascinating. It's interesting to me that one by one, you were just trying to piecemeal fix the entries. That's fascinating. So eventually you just came to, and even then, like, what, and you were still only entering this table, what, on a double one roll on a D20?
Well, okay. So for me, it was a one and then you got to fail a save and, you know, at low level, frankly, you will miss your saves like 75% of the time. So it was most of the ones would get me here.
Yeah.
By mid-level,
yeah, that's something like you do have to think about like the Wazoo effect on your game, like, and is that a thing you want or not, right? Because I think that the frequency that it's going to happen is it will have an overall effect on the overall tone of the game.
Yes, absolutely. And I will say, so, like, you know, okay, so I'm actually not the biggest fan of these big tables. And there's a, you know, and classic games have a lot of big tables. I've kind of moved my game away from that for a lot of reasons. One is I got to go find the friggin' table. Like these one-off crazy things come up. Do I spend space on my DM screen to have this in front of me all the time? Does the crazy amazing thing happen and then we all wait for 4 minutes while I leaf through a book or a folder looking for this? So one of the things is I can't scan this and immediately be aware of what all the effects are, frankly. So at some point I'm playing and I roll the 34 to 39 result here, which is trip and fall. Okay, that can happen in a game, fine. Stunned for 1 to 6 rounds. That can put a player out of the game and you get to do nothing for 5 to 6 rounds. And I'm like, I didn't know that was a possibility.
That's too much. Jeez.
Right? So I didn't know that, and it going in advance. Some of the things on this table have like save versus dexterity and some don't, right? You know, so there's a lot of stuff that'll pop up.
1 to 6 rounds is more powerful than many low-level spells.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And that's just on a random chance to just happen with any swing. Yeah. And exactly. I think there was an interesting note made in the comments of our chat here. I missed it, but somebody I think was talking about like, oh, you introduce sweep attacks and suddenly all of these things ramp up, right? Because
yes.
Now you're making anything that makes you make more rolls, more chances of crits and fumbles.
So Julian pointed that out in the chat, and it's a great point. One of my takeaways I was going to say at the end is that if you're going to use fumbles, that is one of the things you have to watch out for. What I personally, you know, you got to be aware of that issue. I get 2 attacks and now I'm fumbling more often. That's not right. So personally, in my game, I only trigger it on the first attack roll. So if you are a high level fighter and you're getting 2 or 3 or more attacks, you can only fumble on that first D20. is what I do. Now, occasionally I run into a mechanical issue whereby the player, the advanced player, to be a good, fast player is rolling both dice in one hand. And we actually have a little bit of an issue where I have to go, which one counts as first, because we never discussed it before then. In theory, that's my solution to that very legitimate issue.
Yep. That is a problem.
Yep. Good point, Julian. Yep. Thanks for bringing that up.
So what's next, Dan? What else? What happened after you marked up this table? At what point did you say, you know what? I need something else.
Yeah, so I still want it, and I was using the critical hits for a while, and again, the players were suffering, right? There were issues of like, you know, chop off an eye, chop off an ear, chop off a hand, and it's such a legitimate analysis from day one that the players are going to be suffering long-term from those maimings more than the monsters that only show up once and never make a listen check, frankly. So I did finally get away from Carl's rules. I feel like players expect the double damage on D20. So I keep that in my games. And by symmetry, I did want some kind of natural one thing. So I tell you what, okay, so let's talk about late era stuff. And I'll talk about DCC and then what I personally do. So a lot of people, you know, in the last number of years have played Dungeon Crawl Classics. And we had a long running a campaign for several years with our friend Max with that. So maybe just look at the, you know, you were jumping forward by about 30 years. So the DCC table, I have a blue dot on that for what it's worth. Gotcha. And again, this is kind of small. If you can't read this, here's my takeaway. None of it's too crazy. None of it's crazy like Carl's. And for what it's worth here, the stuff at the top of the table is the most severe results. So it says roll zero or less. It says you accidentally strike yourself for normal damage plus 1 point. That is the worst thing that can happen here. There's no roll two times or three times. There's no critical hits. There's no double or triple damage. The worst you can happen is you can stab yourself for just a normal damage roll. I believe what happens is they do send you here on any natural one, but interestingly, the die you roll depends on what armor you're wearing. So if you're rolling plate mail, you roll a D8 and you get one of the more severe results. And if you're rolling leather armor, you roll, guess what you roll when you're wearing leather armor, Paul?
Oh, something delightful, like a D15 and a half.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Paul. It is a D15 and a half. Rounded to the nearest integer. It is, in fact, a D16. You are correct.
Is it a D16?
It's a D16, yes.
That's
So anyway, so you come here kind of frequently, but clearly they've thought about those errors of like being too wahoo, and they've clearly dialed the results down to you're never going to lose six rounds. It's like you get a minus two to your next attack. You lose one round. Your weapon slips out of your hand.
I will say there's a couple items on this chart. So I'm looking at it a little closer here. There's a couple items on this chart that I'm not a fan of. I'm looking at, and I'm just surprised that these are somehow considered better than you accidentally hit yourself for damage. You accidentally smash your weapon against a rock or wall. Mundane weapons are ruined. Completely destroy your normal weapon. Gone. That sucks for a low level character. It does give you the out of like magical weapons are not affected, but still, right. I've played games, like I've seen criticals that are like, oh, you drop your weapon and you have to spend a round picking it up, or right, it goes somewhere else. Right. In fact, that's on here. Number nine, you drop your weapon, you must retrieve it or draw a new one on your next action. Like that seems a little more reasonable to me. Like completely destroying your weapon. Wow, that's rough. And then the other one I have a problem with is supposedly the lightest one on the list, not quite the lightest one, which is just you miss. Oh well, is your incompetent blow makes you the laughing stock of the party, but otherwise causes no damage. And again, just it's putting the DM on the hook, right? The DM is now on the hook to come up with something fucking clever. You know, what happened? Why am I the hilarious laughing stock? What exactly? I thought I was just stabbing with my sword. Not to say that this is necessarily a bad thing, right? Yeah, okay, if you want a little humor in your game, great. Like, let's make up a reason why your character is now the laughing stock of the party. But anyway, that's it. Those are my nitpicks.
I think that's real. I'm glad you said that. I think it's interesting that your number one critique was on the broken sword, because honestly, that's the number one thing that I actually want out of a fumble system, actually, is broken my weapon. You know, my understanding is on, you know, historical battlefields, there were a lot of broken weapons. You walk around, you see a lot of broken arrowheads and a lot of broken swords is fairly common. And actually, one of my Greek complaints about the Carla Greco table that we just looked at is that there's a teeny tiny little chance of a weapon being damaged. Of all the possibilities, I think it's only like a 2% thing. And if anything, I want to see I would like armor, shields, and weapons to be, you know, degrading at the very least, and not be infinitely durable. So frankly, one of the main things I want to see on a fumble table actually is an engagement to make your weapons have to get replaced. So it's funny that you're irritated about that.
I mean, it seems to me more severe than hitting yourself, right? Do a D6 of damage to yourself or completely lose your sword. Again, for a level one character, that's brutal, right? Taking away their stuff is always bad, Dan. That's what I'm saying here. Taking away their stuff, players not happy about that.
I that's a good reminder that I should do more of that. Thank you. Yeah.
I feel like one of those things where outside all this that I want to bring up, but I just want to make sure you have time here, Dan, to get to what is the conclusion here what do you think? What is your conclusion of the DCC table, and are we going somewhere from there?
I think it's interesting that they thought about it.
I want to make sure we have time for that.
I think it's interesting they refined it to be less severe than stuff we've seen in the past. They thought about these issues at the very least.
Are you ready to go on a wild tangent with me, Dan, or do you want to wrap it up
and tell us what you're using?
Okay. So here's my first one, right? So I feel like a lot of the impetus for this is, you know, is that parity, right? Like natural 20 is a thing. Like we've accepted that. We have critical hits, extra damage. I feel like the one should also be significant. It feels there's a tactile niceness to that of like seeing those numbers come up and go, that's a thing, right? So do you then use it for not combat rolls? What happens when I'm rolling dice to jump the chasm or lift the gate or, you know, any other of a million things that could happen in a game that is not swing a weapon at my enemy?
Well, that's a good question. My take is it tends to, I sometimes I step in by fiat and make something up. I've never had rules for that kind of stuff.
And I know, like, when we're talking D&D, maybe this, depending on your edition, maybe this does fit or doesn't fit, but immediately, like, the obvious thing to go through is, what about skill checks? Do skill checks have criticals and fumbles? Right? And then we can't really have a nice chart for those, can we? Because they're so situational, they have to be on the fly. What does it mean to critically succeed at this, you know, at my check, my skill check to research a demon in the library, or, you know, like, I'm joking, like, what?
I hear where you're going, and I will say that there tend to be a number of places where there is some kind of subsystem, right? And it's always unique. You can't have a master rule for this. Some kind of subsystem where, a natural one makes something unusual happen. For example, in fifth edition, right, for your death saves, one of the rare times, but on a death save, specifically, you roll a one and it counts as two failures instead of just one failure on your fifth edition death save. So I think I myself have said, like, thief undoing a trap, removing a trap. It's safe unless you roll a one and then the trap goes off. Other than that, it's not going to happen. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I think you can pick little subsystems where they'll have something like that sometimes.
Hmm. Do you like that? Do you want that in your do you use it? Do you do it right now in your game? Yeah. And do you do the opposite, right? If I am disarming a trap and I roll a 20, do I extra remove the trap?
I might step in and say, and you can relock it behind you anytime you want. Yeah. You can set it. Yeah. You can set it against the monsters as you pass by. I might do that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, but admittedly, honestly, that's going to be a fiat situation for me. I probably am making that up on the fly.
Yep. So I will get into. I don't know if you want to talk about what you use, but I have a preference. I have a direction here, Dan, that I'm going to go that I know is a little weird. A little different.
Let me show you mine, and then you can critique that as part of your possibly sure. better solution. Sure. So mine yep. has a big text and it's in purple, and
yep.
bam, hello, fumble table. So mm-hmm. what I do these days, and again, I don't like these big tables, so I wanted some variety. I didn't want it entirely to be by fiat because I don't entirely trust myself to be fair to the players when that happens. So I wanted it documented. I wanted it written down. I spend a little bit of my screen space, my DM screen space, for this. And what I do now is if you roll a natural one, you roll one more d20 on this table. I can almost, mm-hmm. there's only six options of things that happen on it, so I can almost remember it. 7 through 20 is nothing. Again, low is bad. So from six down, you could drop a weapon, which I expect to see. You can break a weapon, which I think is realistic. You can slip and fall, which for some reason always happens to my monsters over and over again. And then there is, you can hit a friend. You can possibly hit yourself. And on a natural one, then I get to make up something in the situation, in the context that's crazy. I gauge this, like I think I did a little bit of research on, like some of us were talking about Boot Hill misfires, like games with guns will have like a 1-2% chance that your gun jams or something like that. I did a little bit of research on gun misfires as inspiration, and it tends to happen like maybe one time in 50, something like that. So I gauge this table that on any attack, you're going to have something bad happen like one time in 50 or 60 or something like that. And I think that's okay. I was okay with that. It's pretty darn simple. I have the player roll on the fumble chart. So when they roll, they have to roll this again. So I'd say lower is worse. And if they roll low once again, it feels like they're to blame. And that's actually what I do in my games now. I'm pretty comfortable with that.
I do like the elegance of boiling it down to one die roll. Like I like that you've boiled it down to like both the results and the lowered percent chance of it actually happening are in a single roll. That's nice. Yeah, the concise text is good. I'll give you props for that. That's that, right? Like it fits on the screen or it's the one image I think that we put up on the screen that I didn't have to open up in a separate window and zoom in so I could actually read it. Yes, I can read it. Great. Excellent. So yeah, I don't hate this, Dan. I think it's good. I think it's elegant. I wouldn't use it, but yeah.
Understood. thank you for pulling it up.
Yeah.
It's
and when do you ever feel put on the spot? Like is the DM's choice always an enjoyable experience for you, or have you had times when you're like, oh, I don't know, something bad happens?
I don't think it's
ever
happened.
You've never rolled a DM's
I don't think it's
score.
Happened. No, never I don't. I don't think one. I've ever gotten the double ones yet. So I don't hilarious. Know.
That's hilarious.
I'm looking forward to it, though. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'll say, you know, Matt Finch has right the what did he call the Ming vase rule? If you're having a fight in a room and there's a precious vase on a table, it something could possibly happen to it. So I feel like that at least gives me an open window to like.
So an interesting side note though is that does by codifying this, does this limit your ability to do interesting Ming-Vaz stuff on the fly?
I think I'm okay with it. I think I'm comfortable. Yeah. If there was something else, again, I could step in and I could possibly adjust on the fly, or like this encounter, I could write it in the encounter in advance. But I haven't felt that as a pain point.
Yeah. Cause I do like sometimes being able to just as a stake setting before you even roll, look, because of the thing you're trying to do is so risky, if you fail, these things happen, right? Which doesn't even require a fumble chart, right? It's just you fail, this is what's going to happen. So I like having space for that. My personal preference, honestly, and it's funny because I swear, Dan, that I took this from you. So it's interesting to me that it sounds like you're not using it, which is my personal preference is to move this away from the to hit roll and put it in the damage roll. Critical hits are simply the fact that damage dice explode. And I literally was just this past weekend was at a game con running some Fearful Ends, which is what's written into Fearful Ends, is that all damage dice always explode. That's your criticals. So when you're rolling the skill check, there's no exploding dice. There's no high number does a thing. There's no low number does a thing. It's just succeed or fail. But when we get to damage, there's a chance for the damage to go crazy and just pile up. And sure enough, I was running a game last night. I explained this rule to my players, which was amusing because they had experience in Savage Worlds. So they were asking me when they noticed, like, oh, your dice rolling mechanic is kind of similar to Savage Worlds. I'm like, yep, I'm sure it is. I said, except that there's no explosions. And they go, okay. And then I guess the damage, I say, oh, but by the way, the damage dice explode. And it happened just as one of my players got hit by one of the monsters. And I'm rolling a D4 and a D8. And guess what I roll? A 4 and an 8.
Nice.
Double explosion. Nice. Right off the bat. Yeah. I just, and it's the first hit of the game. The first time I had to roll damage in the game. Here it is. Wham. The player takes massive damage. Doesn't quite die, but it's a close thing. Nice. And that is what I want out of my critical system. I really like that. And you might say, well, what about the parody? Or like, what about the fumbles, etc.? It's pretty bad for the players when the monsters can do this, right? I think there is parity in that players can do it and the bad guys can do it.
I mean, my math heart wishes that was a core D&D rule. It's very elegant. It solves the problem of like, I can only hit on a 20, but if they're all critical hits, that's super weird. So I actually really like the way that math distribution works. I actually kind of wish that was the rule. I first heard about it from our friend Joshua, who just chatted. Hey, that's my rule. Was the first. And then as soon as I heard that from him, I was like, oh yeah, I wish I could do that. Now, you were there, Paul. I test ran that in a single one-off tourney game. And it was at the end of, I think it was near the end of the game, our friend Lauren got hit with I'm rolling D8 for sword damage, and that D8 was just determined to come up 8.
I rolled 8,
and took like 45 points of damage, and she was dead, total, super dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, you definitely,
maybe
you only want
this
again, if you
but
want
honestly,
that level
kind
of Gonzo.
Put a small piece in my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to affect the tone of the game, right? It's going to affect the tone of the game, just like I think fumbles do, right? Like the more prevalent your fumbles are, if every time I roll a one, the DM comes with some crazy thing that happens, well, guess what? Most of your combats are going to have crazy things happening, right? Yeah. It's just, you know, just statistically, it's going to start happening. I like it in Fearful Ends because one of the things I talk about in Fearful Ends is how deadly the game is meant to be. It is an intentionally deadly game. You should be avoiding combat. Like, don't let me roll the damage dice. Just don't do it.
Great.
But I mean, the other thing I like about it is that it moves it into the roll of damage. So one, we can still have it happen for other things. You know, you take some falling damage, a magic spell, right? All of these things now have the capability of criticaling, but it removes it from other kinds of checks. It's never happening based on a skill check, right? It's never happening when you're rolling for anything other than damage.
I'm so glad that you get a chance with Fearful Ends to start with kind of a blank slate. Because again, if I could go back to 1974, go to Lake Geneva and make like three arguments to Gary and Dave about please make the rules like this. There's a couple things I would adjust, and nowadays I don't feel I can do that and not completely weird out people when I say that we're running D&D.
Which goes back to our opening discussion of like it came up for you because of expectation at the table, right? And I think that's an important thing, right? And I've run games of D&D in the past where I've said, like, I would just open it up to the table. And I said, what do you guys want, right? Do you want there to be criticals in this game or not? Should we do that? Because it definitely, if they're all going to be disappointed every time a 1 in 20 comes up and I just go, yep, that's a hit, or yep, that's a miss, nothing special, then you know, that's... You know, if I'm making the game a little less fun for them, then maybe I want to change that. But that is my default. If I'm running D&D, my default is 1s and 20s are not special. They're just hits and misses like anything else.
Got it.
I think it simplifies things. Yeah. Go on.
I think your point about giving the players a choice, I think, is really good. I think right at the start of the show, Kevin Thompson put that in the chat, said, I give my players a choice. If they want the double damage, then they have the opposite bad thing is also a possibility. I hear that. I've had situations where the players regretted, right? Like I think there was a point where I was suggesting like we could do version A or B for level drain. We could either have a fixed thing or you could roll for it. And the players picked, yeah, let's roll for it. Let's be crazy. And they rolled the natural one. The worst thing possible thing happened. And they were like, oh, this sucks. What is it that Henry Ford said? If I'd asked my customers, they would have wanted a faster horse. Sometimes, occasionally we, the DMs, as the sommelier, have more experience about what the ramifications of these choices are. Sometimes you have to be a little tasteful and step in and make the choice for your game.
Yeah, I can see that. And again, like I think you know, as the runner of the game, it does make sense for you to make this choice, and you just have to think. I think about what the impact of the tone is on the game, because it is going to impact the tone of the game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And also make sure you have balanced dice. If you're doing exploding, make sure you don't have a die that's like, it's like biased on the high number, because that's their players aren't going to like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the argument against criticals. I feel like that I've heard all the time. Right, is that like the DM rolls a lot more dice, and thus criticals much more often than the players do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just
and if there's some kind of lingering effect. The players are going to deal with a lingering effect longer than a monster that just got it and then they're dead around later.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Dan, we're at time. Any final thoughts on fumbles?
Well, I'm so glad, Paul, that we get to give the two sides of the opinion. I kind of like them. I am warm to the surprise and the danger and the realism argument where these things come from. I will say that if you are going to like insert maybe the fifth edition D&D that obviously doesn't have them, if you're going to insert these rules, the things you got to watch out for is be careful about managing the big tables, that it doesn't slow down the game leafing through the book. If you are using a big table, scan it in advance and determine and tell whether you're comfortable with how severe the results are, because you look at a lot of big tables and RuneQuest is fairly severe and versus DCC that is actually kind of a lot more gentle. So look for that. Watch out for multiple attacks, like Julian pointed out. You shouldn't have a higher chance of fumbling because you're making more attacks. And again, most important of all, make the players roll the dice so they feel bad.
My advice is just don't do it. Just don't use them. I lost count there on the number of caveats that Dan had to add to his list. Not worth it. Too complex. Forget it. Just don't do it.
Nice.
viewers, if you have an opinion or a different method, do you have something else, another way of ruling fumbles that we haven't talked about, or opinions on whether they should or should not be used in your games of D&D or other RPGs? What are there RPGs where they're crucial to the game versus RPGs where they run counter to the tone? Leave us a comment here in the YouTube comments section. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe that'll spin off another conversation for us down the road.
Definitely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us, the Wandering DMs. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and GitHub and other places you can access today. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all of the sites. So please stumble right into that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also through various podcast carriers such as iTunes and Spotify. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those other sites, and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And, you know, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And every tier gets you access to a private Discord server where the conversation continues 24/7. We had such a great conversation just preparing for the show. And about half the charts and tables and examples that we saw this hour are actually thanks to our patrons who are so knowledgeable and helped us out a lot to get some of these great examples in front of us today. So Paul will be there for the after chat in about 10 minutes. Thanks for handling that as I go wandering off, and maybe I'll have photos of where I've gone in a couple days. I'm glad that we had a narrow window here where, Paul, you were coming back from a con before I go to see some stuff myself. So I'm glad that we were able to be here for the 1 p.m. show.
Yeah, barely by the skin of our teeth. But we did.
And thank you for dealing with the critical failure on the technology to start it off. I couldn't have made that up. Amazing. So viewers, don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we really hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.